Johnson, reel 4.
Very great affection. He did a tremendous lot of very good work. So much had he an effect on the nursing staff that the nurses who were off duty, and any, I mean, if you were an evening off, which we were supposed to go about 7 o'clock, and we didn't stay out very late, it was too dark and it was all a blackout. We didn't know where to go in any case. And we'll come back in to go into the chapel. You may know the chapel's there. It's a nice little chapel, do you know it?
No.
Well, there is a little chapel there. And Mr. Hook used to take prayers. The nurses who were on duty, who were going on duty, the night nurses, went every night before they went on duty to have prayers with Mr. Hook in the chapel. And any day nurses who were off duty, I've known many of them, who would come back to go in for prayers. He'd such a hold on the people. We really felt he was something behind us all the time. And he did I've always thought very highly of him. He did a very good work in a very gentle, not obtrusive way. He never made himself obvious in the way that, oh, I'm coming round today. But he would come up, is there anything I can do to help you? Is there any man you'd like me to speak to? Which I thought was very nice.
Did he have a regular round going?
Oh, he went all round the wards, yes, all round the wards. But, of course, in the acute surgical cases, you got more acute cases and you had more people coming in, a changeover, or you're either up or down, you know, in the surgical ward. In the medical ward, you might have an illness which could last you quite a long time. But you're not having a severe operation one day, and that kind of thing. Now, what else can I tell you about?
Back on the subject of night duty, was night a more difficult time for the patients?
Beg your pardon, dear?
Was night a more difficult time for the patients? Was it more depressing for them? More frightening?
I can't recall it. I don't know. There was an atmosphere I have never seen before or since. If I could stress again, everybody was a volunteer, nursing staff and men. And consequently, they were out one to help the other. Now, there was one man I had in one side ward. We used to call him Jock. I never knew his name. He'd be up if he heard one of the men call out. Jock would be up. He was a man who, he had an injury. I'm trying to think where his injury was. It was one of those things that he could move about. I forget where it was. I think it was one of his arms, I think. Anyhow, he had an arm available. But he would get up and attend to the patients to save the nurse. If they wanted a urine bottle or a bedpan, he would get up and give it to them. There was another man in the other side ward called Butler. He was a man who had, I think, I won't guess, an injury. But he was able to get about. And he would do the same thing. So that in the night time, if a man called out, if nurse was at the other end of that ward, and see, it was two wards, and the man called out at the bottom end of this ward, either Jock in one or Butler in the other, would hear it all. There wasn't a night orderly. We didn't have orderlies like they have now. Our orderlies carried the men up and down to the theatre. They brought the food trays up and down. They emptied the dirty dressing buckets and that sort of thing. But they didn't attend to patients as such, as a routine thing. We hadn't one on night duty. But these two men were absolutely marvellous. No, I can't say the men were more depressed at night than in the daytime. I don't think so. The food was poor. Well, it was poor for everybody. We, the nurses, I don't think we had potatoes at all. I don't remember having potatoes. We had boiled rice for a vegetable. But the patients had potatoes. And one or two people in Leeds were extremely good. There was one big wholesale provision merchant, and he brought a cooked ham every Saturday. a whole cooked ham. So, of course, on Sunday, the men had a riot to stand with boiled ham. Then I had another lady, Lady Hepton. She's dead, of course, long ago. And her home was at Newton Hall. Do you know Chapeltown Road? Well, I think it's closed now. Just before you come to Chapel Allerton, on the right-hand side, there used to be Newton Hall. The Hepworths lived there. Hepton. And Lady Hepton and her daughter, Dorothy, took an interest in my ward. I think various people took an interest. And they would bring food and presents and all sorts of things. Well, now, all that, of course, was very helpful to the men. It really was extremely helpful. And we made the best of it that we could. Now, we had at least two royal visits, the King and Queen, King George V and Queen Mary. The first visit was when I was in that ward with the wounded and ill from Gallipoli, a lot of dysentery. And I can remember the King going round, and Lord Stamford was there then with him, and the King walked round and he spoke to every man, and I remember particularly one man who was terribly ill with dysentery. And the King went up and spoke to every man, and he said that he saw on his thing that you were at Gallipoli, and he saw where he'd be, which regiment he was. He said, oh yes, they would be in action at so-and-so. Might be Sidi Baru or Ashibama, one of these places. But he knew where they had been, which was the most extraordinary thing. And for days afterwards, those men talked about it, that the King knew where they had been. He didn't only know their regiment, but he knew where they'd been in battle. Y Beach or W Beach or one of these beaches he'd been to. And there, of course, conditions were absolutely appalling. Now, my husband, well, he wasn't my husband then, was in a field, at a field dressing station. I'll show you a photograph of him. A field dressing station on Gallipoli. It's incredible. You won't believe it when you see it. And that's where he attended to the wounded of Gallipoli before they got onto hospital ships to bring them home. But the King knew all about that. Then we had another visit from the King of Portugal, who appeared to be very interested. And we'd several visiting dignitaries, generals and so forth. But the King and Queen's visits was extremely interesting, because he did speak to all the men and he did go round all the wards. And Queen Alexandra followed. And when he would stop, I remember she was standing quite near to where I was standing, a little group outside the main building, and she was waiting for him to come. And she turned up to me, where is the King? But he was standing talking to another group of patients, you see. He was about a few minutes late for his next appointment, I think. Now, we hadn't any place where we could sit when we were off. This is day duty. Night duty, of course, was just sheer nothing, you know, nothing at all. But work. And the day nurses, the day sisters, we hadn't anywhere at all where we could sit. When we went off duty, I used to just go and flop and lie on my bed, exhausted. Or go perhaps take a tram, they were then, down Beckett Street and get a cup of tea and come back again. But this Lady Hepton that I had visiting me, she said to me, where do you sisters sit when you go off duty, when you've time? Well, I said, we have nothing there. We sit in our cubicles if we have any spare time. Well, she said, I'm going to see the powers of be and see if I can't arrange it. So she went to the headquarters and she said, but we hadn't any sitting room. And she said, if you will give me a room, I will furnish it from my own home. The confirmation is that they did. They gave us a room about the size of this. It had been an administration room, and they split that up in somewhere else. And she furnished it with the whole of her furnishing. And she came in, when she opened it, we were all very delighted. This was just for the sisters. The nurses, to my knowledge, never had a sitting room at all. And that corner cupboard, which is very lovely, was where we used to keep our little ration of butter. I think it was either 1 or 2 ounces, I'm not sure. It wouldn't be more than 2 ounces, I'm sure. And we kept it in little pants packs with our names on in there. And she said, the first sister who marries, I'll give them that cupboard. So, of course, they all chopped it, because most of them knew that I was engaged, you see, and they used to say to me, oh, that'll be your cupboard book, you see. But I didn't say anything about it. Well, eventually, just to finish about the cupboard, after the war ended, which I wasn't demobilised till 6 months after the war ended, because Matron wouldn't demobilise, powers that be wouldn't demobilise me, I still had this. See, the wounded were still coming in. Anyhow, I thought that I was never going to, I'd forgotten about it, as a matter of fact. Well, to my amazement, it arrived at my mother's home, all wrapped up in sacking cloth, with a little note inside it that mother had died, but that she remembered, this was a daughter, Dorothy. Mother had died, unfortunately, but she said, I remember that she promised that whichever sister married first was to have this corner cupboard, so I'm sending it to you with my thanks, which I thought was very sweet of her. And inside it, there is still the little card, which I could show you if you like. It's a little card inside it, which was attached to all the furniture. She attached a little card loaned by Lady Hepton to the sisters' sitting room for the duration of the war. And then after the war was over, she took it all back. God, that's the history of that little corner cupboard, which I think is rather sweet, don't you? Well, now, I've shown you the handiwork, that one, haven't I? I've shown you the handiwork.
Did the men have someone come in to teach them to do that?
Oh, yes. There was a Miss Flum. P.H. L-A-double-M, she was of German extraction, but she used to come in and teach the men to do this. Bring the requisite materials and show them how to do it. Well, they did quite a lot of that sort of thing. And it helped them, those who could use a hand. As I say, the man who did that smaller badge was laid flat on his back, he had a back injury. The one who did that one was peppered by shrapnel, no use whatever, in his right shoulder. He did it all with his left hand. And we had 2 or 3 very good regular visitors who would come round and do any shopping that they could for the men, write any letters they could for the men, bring any little thing that they could possibly get. Of course, sweets were practically non-existent, you couldn't get them, but if they could get any fruit, they would bring it. If they could get any eggs, they would bring them. And with 1 or 2 very nice, there was also 2 or 3 that I can think about. One I can tell you a tragedy of, but I wasn't diverse. Now, during the whole of this time, the nurses were getting rather apprehensive as to the quality of nursing after the war. You see, any amount of small hospitals were being opened up, staffed by trained St. John's people, but a lot of untrained people, all calling themselves nurses. Or most of them calling themselves nurses. And it was during the war years that a group of trained staff in various hospitals talked and talked and were the original founders of the College of Nursing, now made the Royal College of Nursing, and of which I was a founder member. I have my founder members thing upstairs. And that was the origin of the first college where trained nurses from recognised training schools were admitted to the College of Nursing. And from the College of Nursing then came the state registration of nurses. So that now all nurses who are trained have to be state registered, and that originated from the college, which is now the Royal College of Nurses, which started with the 1914-18 war, a group of the trained nurses wanting to make the nursing profession on the highest possible level. That was the start of that, and now, of course, it's a very big thing, this Royal College of Nursing. I got my paper this morning, strange to say, from the Royal College of Nursing. I hadn't realised that, but it came this morning. I'm still a founding member, they still send me things. Now, I think it was, I can't quite remember, but I was gazetted for the Royal Red Cross, recommended for the Royal Red Cross. And I went down to Buckingham Palace. By this time I was married. Well, the funny thing getting married was that my fiancé then, being a New Zealander of course, hadn't a home in England. And every time he came home on leave, it was just a chance of coming and staying in a hotel in Leeds and hoping I'd be off duty, which I had very little off duty when I was so dead tired. And all in the end, he said, "Don't talk." And he was leaving his things at my own home. And so we decided to get married in the following leave, when next he had a leave, which was in, this was in, he had a leave in February. So when I put it to Mason, I wanted to marry, well, I signed on for the duration of the war, you see, which was very a problem. So I had to get War Office permission. Fantastic, but it's true. And I was allowed to marry on condition that I fulfilled my obligation to serve for the duration of the war. So I did, and I was. And I was married in 1917, after which we spent our leaves together, of course. I tried to arrange. I went without my leave until my husband telegraphed that he was coming home on leave. And he was all over the place, Gallipoli and Egypt and Salonique and Mesopotamia, both battles of the Somme, ended up in Germany. And but it wasn't easy. There was only one other girl who got married all during the whole voyage.